Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, it's Leave It In the Ring.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is a very special edition of Leave It In The Ring Radio. I'm your host, flying solo, Gabriel Montoya. Dave Duenas is on a beach somewhere in Southern California on a very rare and much-needed vacation. He may join us in a bit. We're also waiting for Brian Fogg, one of our reporters, to call in. But if he doesn't, I guess it's just going to be you and me this evening. Let's get right into it. Oh, actually, there's Dave on the line. Dave, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Oh, I imagine I was going to hear waves in the background. We haven't jumped into anything. I don't know what happened with Brian Fogg, but we do have Terrence Crawford getting ready to call in at 6:05. He's the new – well, he defended his title for the first time this last weekend in Omaha, Nebraska, against Yuri Gamboa. Dave, you want to jump into the driver's seat here, or should I – are you doing a special guest appearance where you're just chilling with a Mai Tai in your hand?
Not yet, man. I wish I was. I'm actually hiding out here in the truck and stuff. It's just so loud. We're out here over here at Sea Beach right now, and there's a concert going and, you know, a bunch of activities because of 4th of July coming up. But what a great fight, first off. You know, I mean, you know, I picked Crawford to win the fight. I thought technically he's just sound in the boxing department, you know, but didn't think that he was going to be able to bring the power that he did, but he just showed that he has true grit. You know, this is a guy that knows how to turn it up. And you remember, a lot of fans would constantly say, pure boxer, but boring. And he just really shook that off. You know, now he's got everybody talking. Now he's got everybody just waiting for the next move. I mean, immediately after what he did to Yorkis Gamboa, and I got to give it to Gamboa, too. You know, he fought his ass off. He showed heart. Too bad he didn't have any heart to do any type of testing, and it proved to us that he was clean and that he's always been trying to be clean, and his promoter didn't want to step up to the plate. Instead, was too busy trying to coordinate an event on ESPN or Friday night, well, what, Wednesday night fights for his birthday bash. That was just awfully terrible. But he did show that he's a fighter and he's going to come to fight, and he gave the fans exactly what they wanted, with some fireworks before 4th of July. But it was Crawford who just had the bigger cherry bombs in the ring. And it was great. He ended the note perfect in his home state, hometown, and he walked away as a superstar. You know, and immediately it made you start thinking, okay, what's next for this kid? You know, who else do we put him in there with? You know, do we put him in with Mikey Garcia? What other names are out there that are going to be, of a significance, or that's going to keep that gravy train just mowing on? Because now Top Rank has got something big in their hands. And I thought the only person that would probably be worth talking about, if it ain't Mikey Garcia, would Beltran. But the problem is Beltran shot himself in the foot. You know, ever since he's departed ways with Steve Vader, he really hasn't done anything. So it kind of leaves Crawford as a lone wolf in that division with really nobody out there for him to face to make any type of noise. So I'm just wondering, where do they go off a great performance with this Gamboa win? With Crawford, what do you think, Gabriel?
I'm not quite sure yet. You know, I want to hear from him and find out what questions, the answers to certain questions in terms of weight and other things. Let me jump into the fight. I just watched it, and for the second time, I've seen it, saw it live, but. To me, it seems strange. There was a prevailing wisdom that Crawford came from behind. You saw a lot of headlines that said he came from behind in order to win the fight. And if you watch the fight, the phone is just blowing up here. He's calling in. Should I bring him in on my line, do you want to stick doing the whole thing, or I'm a little confused as to how we should proceed. You should call into the it, It's easier if he calls in. There he is.
I just
pulled him in, and yeah, okay.
Okay.
Well, let me jump back into what I was saying.
Go ahead.
Wow, that's really loud. Dave?
That's not me.
I'm going to... Well,
Karen?
Whatever that is, it's gone. Anyways, let me jump back into the point. I think, Dave, we'll just stick with you and I right now, and let's just, because we got Terrence calling in 3 minutes. I'd like to set it up. It's a little chaotic.
I think you just put, Terrence Crawford on hold by now. I thought I heard Emily in the background.
Are you sure? Okay. Let me grab him and, yeah, because I've got two numbers here. All right. Let me introduce him before we pull him on. This WBO lightweight champion, Mr. Terrence Crawford, joining us here. Mr. Crawford, are you there on the line?
Yeah, I'm there.
Okay. How you doing? This is Gabriel Montoya with Leave It in the Ring with my co-host, David Duenas. Thank you so much for joining us, man, and congratulations on your first defense. Dave, you want to jump in?
Hey,
you're welcome.
I'm trying to wonder what that noise is in the background.
Do you hear like a piano in the background or a car door open or something? It's just like that. There we
go. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know, first off, congratulations. Congratulations, Crawford, on a spectacular win. It was a great fight. In the first couple of rounds, it looked like that you needed to find how to adjust to his speed and what you needed to do. You know, and the commentators at HBO were criticizing you about deciding to go southpaw. But I when I saw you do that, I was like, and I tweeted it out. I said, you're trying to catch him with that short right check hook. Was that the plan? Was to try to catch him to dart in because he was darting in and out with his punches?
Right. It was already in the makings of what I was going to do and how I was going to go about the fight. You know, just get accustomed to his speed and, you know, his darting in and out because Gamboa, he kind of fight one speed. You know, it's like fast and that's it.
All the headlines say that you came from behind to win the fight. That you had easily, you know, lost the first three rounds, and then all of a sudden you switched to southpaw and you took the fight over. Do you see the fight that way? I watched it for the second time just about an hour ago, and it just seems so much closer to me, and that you were kind of letting the fight come to you a little bit, and then you switched to southpaw, which was a pretty dramatic move, and it really did help you take control. Tell me how you saw the fight. Do you ever feel like you were losing?
Well, I felt like he won the first round, and I felt like I won the second. I felt like he won the third. I felt like I won, you know, the fourth and all. You know, I felt like I was just, like, warming up. You know, like you said, letting the fight come to me, not rushing anything and taking my time.
What about him said that, you know what, I need to make this shift to southpaw? What was happening that you said, you know, this is the solution?
Well, he just kind of beat me to the punch because I was being more relaxed or basical than anything. You know, I was being too relaxed. And so I knew I had to step it up and capitalize on him dropping his hands because I was barely missing him coming over top with my right hand. So I initially thought that I'd catch him with the jab from the southpaw stance and catch him with the hook coming in.
Did you ever feel his power? You know, HBO made a big deal about it in the ninth. And I noticed you had switched back to right-handed at that point, and you got caught with a shot underneath. Were you as hurt as they pretended?
No, not at all. You know, like I said after the fight, yeah, he caught me with a good shot. You know, he buzzed me a little bit, but it wasn't to the point where, you know, I was going to get knocked out or fall to the ground or anything. But he did catch me with a good shot that I wasn't prepared for because I was overconfident and both of my hands were down, and I kind of walked right into the shot.
You know, Jeff, I want to ask you this because, you know, this was such a great win, and it was a fight a lot of us already had thought it was going to be a good fight. You know, we thought it would be a technical fight. Nobody really thought that this was going to be a dog fight. And I think everybody kind of saw a real different side of you. But now that everything's done and the smoke is clear, where do you go from here? I mean, I know you guys are probably not thinking that far along yet, but, I mean, you guys had to walk away and say, okay, now where do we go as in growing power, because you drew so many people in your hometown. What do you do next?
Well, you know, like I always say, you know, I leave that up to my managers, you know, whatever they want me to do, you know, I leave that up to them because that's their job. But, yeah, I believe in the press conference, you know, my coach said, you know, when in doubt, that there's going to be a dog fight, you know, and I don't believe everybody believed him when he said that, but we've been training for this. You know, we training for anything that may happen in the ring, and I think it showed that night.
What's it like with that many people? I mean, I imagine, you know, at its base, when you've been in a fight on the street, if it lasts long enough, there's a crowd that gathers around you and they're cheering you on or whatever. But what's it like in that kind of environment, 10,000 of your people? Does that give you different spurts of adrenaline throughout the fight? Does that carry you through, or do you even hear it?
Oh, yeah, you hear it, you know, but I kind of block it out because I'm so focused. You know, as you can see, if you look on my face, you know, a lot of people, I'm coming out, like, I'm coming out to the ring, they trying to grab my hand, they want me to shake their hand, and, you know, I'm just so focused on the fight. You know, it's no time to play. You know, it's no time to be worried about anybody else there or, you know, anybody trying to say hi or grab me. You know, I'm just more focused on the fight more than anything. So that's why the crowd didn't play a factor in this fight right here.
I mean, you look like a seasoned veteran out there, man. I mean, I thought that with a big crowd like that, there was going to be some jitters. But I saw you kind of possessed. Like, you were just so focused. And even the speed that Gamboa was showing in those first couple of rounds, it really didn't seem like you or your corner were panicking at all. It didn't seem like you guys were going through the motion or like you guys were already aware that you were going to lose it. I mean, were you guys, like, thinking we're going to lose the first couple of rounds until we kind of figure out what game plan we're
going to
establish with? I mean, what was going on? How did you guys figure this out?
Well, yeah, we all knew that in camp, you know, my coach always said, you know, he's going to come out fast. He'd probably jump on you. You know, just stay relaxed and stay with the game plan. You know, we're gonna break them down slowly but surely, and, you know, and we're going to get the job done.
Was there anything about him that surprised you?
No. Everything about him was everything that we, you know, had prepared for. You know, him coming out fast, him jumping in and out, him darting in and out, him pulling with his hands down, you know, all that. You know, him slowing down in the fifth round. So these are things that we plan for.
How long do you feel like, you know, immediately after the fight, they started talking Pacquiao, and you know, obviously it's not next, but do you think you want to kind of hold the weight, you know, at 135, get some more defenses, maybe unify, and like solidify your legacy at that weight, or for you is the dream at a much higher weight, you know, where you think you'll peak and your true greatness will show?
Well, once again, you know, like I said, I leave that up to my managers. You know, they know best. You know, but I'm, like I always said then, and I'm going to say it again, I'm ready for anybody. As long as I train to the best of my abilities and I'm in shape and I'm ready, you know, I don't feel nobody can beat me.
ESPN today, Dan Rafael reported that there was no drug testing for the fight. And considering Gamboa's, you know, biogenesis history, he doesn't really ask questions or answer questions about it. I've asked him on Twitter a ton of times. Did it bother you? Did you worry about that heading into the fight? How do you feel about that subject?
Well, I had mentioned to my coach before the fight even happened. You know, we signed for random drug testing, and I was like, they never tested me for anything, you know, so I wonder if they tested him for anything, you know, so I didn't know if they tested him and didn't test me because I never had an issue with drugs. You know, I never took any drugs. I don't even really too much take vitamins. So that wasn't no problem with me, but I had mentioned to him and he was like, he was going to check in with that, but we never got word back of anything. So after the fight, you know, I goes in the room and I'm waiting for the guy to come in so we can do the urine test or the blood test, whatever. Nobody shows up. They say, you're free to go. And I'm like, what? You know, so I couldn't speak on it.
So, sorry, I accidentally.
I'm just asking, Tanner, are you prepared, Tanner, for any type of testing if it is ever asked for your next fight? Or, let's just say, because the numbers fit so good with the Gamboa fight and he wants a rematch, would you want to enforce a testing this time around?
I'm prepared for a drug test all year round. You can random test me any time of the year, any day of the year. You can test me every day if you want to. That's how clean I am. I'm not worried about it.
There you go.
Do you think, because I know Tim Bradley's now doing VADA testing, Provodnikov is, Algieri did for his last fight, and this is, you know, others. I think Edwin Rodriguez and Donaire are still doing year-round testing. Donaire's in his second year. Do you have any interest in joining that club as somebody that just volunteers and says, you know, I'm just going to do it to show that I'm an elite guy and I'm a clean guy? It just seems like in both sports, MMA and boxing, it's just become more and more of an issue. I mean, that a dude just got caught for EPO and HGH, you know, in MMA, who, you know, for a long time was saying he was a clean fighter. I guess I'm not trying to put you in a corner. You know, I don't believe in really making it about one guy having to do it, but I do think that the champion should set something of an example in this day and age. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, like I said, you know, they can test me whenever. You know, I ain't never had an issue with taking any kind of drugs. I ain't never had an issue about having a dirty UA or nothing of that nature. So, you know, it's whatever they want to do.
I really appreciate your candor, man. Let me ask you this, too. In watching you, you got compared by Roy Jones to Marvin Hagler. Who are your, you know, because of your switch hitting ability. And, you know, some guys switch hit, but they're not as effective. And you were able to fight on a high level, you know, even a more effective level, turning southpaw. Have you always been ambidextrous? Is that something new you've worked on? And also, what are your favorite fighters? What have you been influenced by to get to that kind of point?
Well, I've been doing that. I started doing that in my amateur days. You know, I seen that I was a natural at it, and I started just practicing it. You know, my coach used to always say, well, if you don't do it right. You know, so I started, you know, practicing both styles, both stands in the gym, and then it just came natural, even more natural when I'm fighting because it was something that I tried in the gym and worked on. You know, but I used to watch Floyd Mayweather, but still do. Floyd was a guy that I looked up to. Pernell Whitaker was a guy that I looked up to. Sugar Ray Leonard was a guy that I looked up to. Marco Antonio Barrera was a guy that I liked to watch when he was, you know, converted to boxing, and Meredith Taylor and, you know, Chavez, those guys that I liked it to watch, you know, just to see, you know, how they break down the fighter and what they do when the fight is getting rough and how do they react to certain things.
Is there a fighter, and I know, you know, I don't, you know, you've answered in terms of what's going to be next, but if you're looking around at some point, is there a fighter that you would like to get in the ring with that you think is possible, but the fight isn't quite there yet, that it could be your Leonard Hearns or your Hagler Hearns?
Well, I don't know, you know, you never know because it's boxing. You know, I don't look at fighters and be like, oh, man, I want to fight him, or I want to fight him. You know, I just look at all of us like, you know, we all trying to accomplish the same thing, you know, as being on the top of the game and become a world champion and be labeled as one of the greats that ever put on a lace of gloves. So I don't go out there looking at, oh, I want to fight him or I want to fight him, or I don't ever call out fighters. You know, I let them call me out, or I let my managers do their job and, you know, make the fight happen.
Fair enough, yeah. I mean, it is kind of an ever-changing landscape, you know. The next fight could change everything. Plus, there's a million different leagues. It's not as, like you could say, well, I want to fight this guy. Sometimes it's not even up to you, you know. It's up to the politics. But, man, I really wish you well. I was, you know, watching each one of your fights, watching you grow, you could see you overcome different obstacles. But I think this fight showed your depth and all the dimensions that you have in a way that we'd never seen before. And it's wonderful to have another franchise, and, you know, a burgeoning franchise in the sport. And I wish you all luck in the world, and thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate you. Thanks for having me.
Hey, anytime. You take care.
All right.
And that was WBO lightweight champion of the world, Terrence Hunter Crawford. I think finally we have Mr. Brian Fogg. Sorry, it was a little chaotic at the top of the show. I wasn't sure if we wanted to hit him with three hosts, but it's wonderful to have you with me here, man. Thanks so much for joining
us. Thanks a lot. Sorry about that. Technical difficulties before coming in.
Oh, hey, it wouldn't be Blog Talk if it wasn't a technical difficulty of some kind.
Exactly.
Let's grab a couple of calls. We've got some callers on the line. We're talking the HBO card, Crawford over Gamboa, as well as Matt Korobov over the guy whose name I don't want to butcher. 650, you're live on Leave It in the Ring.
Hey, fellas, how are you doing?
Good.
I'm doing great. Who is this?
This is Jess from the Bay Area.
Hey, how you doing, Jess? Great weather, right?
Good.
Is
good,
it perfect?
Good. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
What was on your mind?
Fireworks tomorrow. Hey,
I
would love to see, and this would be awesome, to see Juan the Baby Bo Diaz come up to Omaha to fight Crawford. Somehow fight him at a catch weight when he's coming up at his rebound. That I would fly to Omaha to see that fight.
Yeah, I wonder if Diaz would step out of his comfort zone into somebody else's like that. I mean, I guess he is kind of in a position of wanting. That's a pretty fun fight, you know. Well, what do you think, Brian?
You know, I'm not quite sure about that. Juan Diaz 5 years ago, sure, but really in his comeback, he hasn't shown a whole lot to get anywhere close to indicating that he's near the top level anymore.
This would be a marquee test for both.
Well, I think it would be the right style for Crawford if you wanted to get an aggressive performance out of him, that's for sure. But I think if you're trying to, you know, rebuild that franchise a little bit and Diaz to make some money, draw some people in, you know, it may be the end of a road for him. It kind of depends on what he wants. But, you know, he probably does need a few more fights to get in. But I've never been a big Juan Diaz guy, but I have to admit that he does give a very honest effort every time and always a spirited effort, you know. So
Juan Diaz
interesting
is
fight.
Everyone's type of fighter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like a one-punch knockout artist. That's, I think, the one thing that he's missing. But in terms of the honest effort and just always coming forward and throwing a lot of punches and not, you know, there's no quit in that guy. And I would agree with him. Is there anything else on your mind?
And then I'd like to see Gamboa move down and fight Leonardo Donaire. Now, that would be another great fight. There's a lot of good potential out there, fellas. I can't wait to see it. I just need to get my promoter's license.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a good fight, Gamboa and Donaire. Like, I wonder, though, you know, if he moves down to 130, you know, Donaire, I just think he's topped out, you know, at the weight that he's at, and I just kind of wonder. I think Gamboa would have the edge in that in terms of explosiveness and power, but it is two awkward guys. You know, watching the fight with Crawford, just looking at it a second time, and, well, you know, Gamboa did have a really nice third round. He just still seems like a guy that is all about exploding for a few seconds and then waiting and waiting and waiting and then exploding and waiting. And there's a few moments where he can kind of duck under and, you know, use change levels, shoot into the body, shooting to the head. But the overall is just kind of like no beginning, middle, and end. It's just an athletic fighter. That's why Crawford was able to kind of tame him, because he used the basics. He used a really nice jab, and then he mixed in straight punches. And even, you know, from either side, he was doing that. And but that metronome jab is what got it done, and Gamboa's missing it. Donaire is a little bit more like Crawford than he is Gamboa. He does use the jab and can get a little more traditional, particularly these days. That's an interesting fight. I like it.
Right on. Well, thanks for taking my call, fellas, and have a great great 4th of July.
Hey, my pleasure. You too, man. In the 951, we'll grab another call and kind of jump into that promoter news. Is a good segue. In the 951, you're live on Leave It in the Ring.
No, peace, fellas. I was just listening.
Oh, that's all right. Peace to you. Happy 4th. All right, there's another 951. You're live on Leave It in the Ring.
Ooh,
okay. Yeah, and that would be 2 knockdowns in a row.
Might have to call the police on that one.
Well, Brian, you know, speaking of promoters' licenses, today was learned, and it was reported by Mitchell Abramson of New York Daily News, that Floyd Mayweather Jr. had retained a promoter's license for the first time, and he's going to do it in New York. He's got a New York's promoter's license. Your thoughts on this and how it shapes or fits into the puzzle that is this ongoing kind of tectonic shift that's going on in boxing between Golden Boy Promotion splitting off from Richard Schaefer, who, and all the different executives that were kind of, you know, Schaefer guys, if you will, Bruce Binko being the former COO of Golden Boy, is now becoming an advisor with Mayweather Promotions. Fill us in. What are your thoughts on all this?
Well, I guess Al Haymon finally has a de facto promoter's license without ever actually having to get one.
Exactly.
It's fairly simple on that part. We all know Haven can't get his promoter's license because he's sometimes a manager. Who knows about that? That's a soapbox for later. But, you know, he finally has his puppet.
You have the floor in regards to this subject. So whatever you want to fill in, we got 30 minutes. You know, we could break down some fights, but, you know, we saw the fights last night. So this is kind of the middle of the show. You know, we're heading towards 30 minutes left. Feel free to fill in as much as you want. I mean, act as if I'm talking about PEDs and just, you know, go on a tear.
No, I learn something new every time. But one thing I did come across earlier today that's kind of a sidetrack from that is about an Al Haymon Sports LLC new board member named Bruce Hardy McLean. He is an investment banker or a big-time venture capitalist investor from Europe whose startup, well, he started about 30 years ago, CVC, which is Citicorp Venture Capital, is actually, was until today, a part owner and owned 35.5% of Formula One. He's also on the Formula One board. That's another thing that's interesting, but the big connection here back to Haymon I find rather suspect is he's on the Formula One board with Formula One, one of the large stakeholders, Waddle & Reed. It's an investment firm out of Kansas City. And Waddle & Reed was briefly named in the main event lawsuit of somewhere Al Haymon was going looking for investors.
Right. So, I mean, it seems like what's interesting to me is that you got that main event's complaint. You've got, Oscar De La Hoya suing Richard Schaefer for $50 million. And yet they seem to be just proceeding as if everything's going to work out, that litigation is going to either, you know, fall by the wayside or take so long that they're just – they'll already have their plan enacted. What do you think it is? What do you think – why are they moving forward with such hubris, you know, just so – the devil may care, if you will. Also, do you think Dick Schaefer is going to figure into all this, or is he going to be on the sidelines until 2018? Is that why he's bringing in this McLean character, because Richard Schaefer's days are done in boxing?
On Schaefer, I don't know if he's done in boxing, but I find it hard to believe he's going to have a bigger role. This guy's a lot like Schaefer. I mean, Luxembourg to Switzerland and that sort of thing, but maybe this guy will just be a board member, but I'm guessing he's going to be rather active, being that it's a startup. With Schaefer, he could very possibly be on the shelves until 2018. Or, you know, he might be the world's highest paid housekeeper. Who knows?
Can he, I mean, if he has a non-compete, can Schaefer even act, say, like an advisor? Can he do anything at all with this new company? Or does he literally have to be all things
boxing related? Nothing boxing related, but they have gone into some level of arbitration, and now I don't know how much to expect out of it, and I really highly doubt we'll see $50 million come out of it, but it wouldn't surprise me if they settle out. And Schaefer is, it's possible he'll be allowed to work before 2018 after a settlement, or before that, excuse me. But that's hard to say. It's hard to say how far Oscar and Golden Boy will want to go on this. I'm guessing pretty far, being that, you know, your own CEO is sabotaging your business, but...
Yeah. That's the thing that's kind of funny to me, is that everybody was like, you know, the ESPN report that came out, and, you know, we're not really sure what it is, but it's like, well, it's fairly obvious, and it's been obvious for years, that finally somebody went, hey, I'm growing, you know, your business under my banner, and I don't really want to be doing that. That's what it seems like. And the CEO was helping him do it.
Exactly.
It just, I don't understand how he's going to get away with this one.
That wild guess, the CEO's job description, I'm guessing he signed something saying, you know, as working for you, I'll work in your best interest. So that seems pretty obvious, too. But,
yeah,
you know, it's also very possible that Al Heyman sees, you know, Richard Schaefer is like an old, used up stripper that you don't need anymore.
Wow.
He's filed it, he's done his job, and on to the next foot soldier.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you. You know, at some point, I mean, you kind of show, you look at the way Heyman does business, and he's gone from having different promoters, such as like Lou DiBella, Gary Shaw, Dan Goosen, and Golden Boy. It's not like he really has his people. You know what I mean? He's got guys that he uses. If you're not useful anymore, he'll move on to the next one. I mean, Floyd Mayweather, I think, is going to fit in nicely as kind of, you know, the black Oscar De La Hoya, in a sense. It's the same kind of brand, you know what I mean? Except he's more of a bad guy, but the former Olympian who became a pay-per-view star, developed by Top Rank, he's brought along great. And, you know, the difference is, I think, that one, Floyd has become more of a much more careful matchmaker than he never went through the kind of, I think, competition that Oscar did in terms of facing his contemporaries. You know, when Oscar got to the welterweights, it was on the Donkey Kong, and he fought everybody. Now, granted, he fought them at the right time for him, but still, he took those risks. And Floyd, you know, he decided that it's not going to be blood and guts. It's going to be excellence. It's going to be perfection that I'm going to sell. And also the hope that, you know, maybe this guy loses. I mean, you know, when you get polarizing like that, that's when you're a star. And Floyd is, you know, unequivocally the biggest star in the sport. But, you know, in terms of being a businessman, well, I'm still waiting for Filthy Rich Records to come out with our records. You know, we'll see how much of this has been Al Heyman kind of setting himself up to have, like you said, his own promotional front that he can use, you know, yet again. But I think this is going to be a much larger scale than he's ever done it. All those guys that he's signing, and we see that he's still signing people. Vonis Martin Rosen just got signed.
I believe it's up around almost triple digits.
How many guys he's got? Yeah, it's getting there.
I believe
there. So I mean, he's ready to start his own league at this point. And I still, you know, that the idea that they're going to start a broadband channel, or, you know, some sort of internet channel on their own with their own fights, probably their own coverage at this point. You know, UFC has gotten away with having its own publications. You know, pretty much they own several of the top websites. And I think that's what's going to happen here. We saw with The Ring that nobody cares. So what do you think? is it within a year, you know?
Yep. Well,
do you think
that's
where we're going to be at?
It smells very Dana White-ish.
It does.
And, you know, as we're seeing now, we're seeing all the mistakes Dana's making now. I mean, that's everything. His pay-per-views aren't doing well. Fighters aren't happy. And then, you know, everything else that comes along with him. Now, that Heyman and the network, sometimes that sounds like they're trying to run before they can walk. You know, they're not quite sure what kind of reception they're going to bring in. They have enough fighters, I suppose they can make the fights if they really want to, but that's a big step for a company right off the bat.
Yeah, I'm just very curious to see. Well, also, I mean, you know, Heyman has, for whatever reason, he's got, you know, people, I guess now it's because he's got all the talent. HBO and Showtime have to deal with him. Showtime seems more than happy to, but I think they're, you know, I don't know, Steven Espinosa might just be grateful that this is how he got his job, you know, is by being.
I think he's grateful
just kind
to have a job.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, it'd be interesting to see if he gets named in any, you know, get pulled into all this stuff. But
well, he was named in the main event lawsuit.
In the main event, but I'm curious about the one with Oscar. If there's going to be any litigation from his end about it, you know, that some sort of collusion. But who knows? I mean, I think the TV execs always kind of they're kind of off the hook because they've got the dates.
Well, Espinosa and Showtime kind of they benefit from the same thing that Al Heyman does. When the Ali Act was written, no one really ever mentioned, you know, TV execs or advisors. No one thought of it at that time, really.
No, that's true. You know, I mean, at this point, well, you know, sooner or later, like you look at the movie business, right? And boxing, in some ways, is like that. You know, you're putting up these one-off events, and you're hoping that they breed a trilogy. You know, you're hoping that it's a hit. But because when there's so much money on the line and so much money going up, everybody has to have their say. The producers, the executive producers, the studio, the distributor, you know, there's so many guys that are like worrying about how's the public going to handle it, that eventually you kind of lose touch. And also it's such a small club that it becomes about relationships as opposed to, you know, what the public really wants to see. You know, more guys than not in Hollywood will tell you that, like, studio execs, unless they've got like a really good vision, like, don't always know exactly what the hell they want to do, you know, what they're doing. They're kind of worried, and a lot of them kind of direct out of a place of fear or work out of a place of fear. Now, with the network execs, I think where they're working out of is it's just too many relationships. It's really about, well, I've got this fighter I need to move. You know, what can you do for me? And we get some pretty nasty-looking fights, like the Ivan Redkoch fight. His opponent, dude, why would you ever put that guy on TV? But Billy did it last night. Why would he ever be on television? If 50 Cent wasn't his guy, like, we wouldn't be seeing that guy.
Oh,
and we
I'm
should
ready.
Never
Forget
see him
about
again.
Billy did.
Oh, yeah, he scarred my psyche. How long do you think 50 Cent is going to be in the business? I mean, he just got, you know his guy Davis last night taken out.
He obviously has the money, but it depends. I mean, he can't be making a whole lot, if anything.
He's not making any, yeah.
No, I'm under the impression he'd have to be losing quite a bit, but, you know, it really depends how long he wants to do this as a hobby.
I would agree with that, yeah. I mean, I think he's just kind of like a weekend warrior in the sport to me. And, you know, really, he got kind of stuck. He was, like, he was making this move, what he thought was Floyd, and then he just started talking way too much trash way too early, and the whole thing fell apart. I mean, to me, Floyd is kind of like a woman under 30. You know, it's they're still not quite settled, or even a man under 30. They haven't really figured out what they're really going to do, and they could really change at any moment until you, like, really settle in. And Floyd is still a very up-and-down kind of guy. That was not a relationship that I would have banked any money on.
No, well, then 50 Cent, you know, in some sense it's almost noble that he picked up all these fighters that, that he promised a home and they didn't have one. Mayweather Promotions got existed. It's kind of like he was a stepfather adopting his wife's kids.
The one that really, you know, the one that it's like home for wayward boxers, you know, and it just. But I think he also, you know, these guys, when you have, and Golden Boy was like this to an extent in the beginning, when you have your name kind of gives you a status in another area that you don't quite actually, your experience doesn't really warrant. Like De La Hoya was a hell of a fighter, and he was, you know, right there in the driver's seat, or, you know, like the passenger seat with Bob, for one of the better promoted careers of all time. And so I'm sure he learned something along the way of how this all worked. And he had to know about matchmaking or getting the guy at the right time. I'm sure he was a realist. It wasn't the kind of guy that just believed he was as great as he was. You know, I think that's definitely not his journey. And but 50, you know, he's got Bob Arum going, absolutely, we're gonna learn together, and I'm gonna help teach him the game, and I'm really just gonna set up his fighters so that my guys will look good. You know, and he did that. I mean, he got absolutely played in Omaha. You know, so that, you know, Gamboa hit the canvas and he walked out.
And it's not the first time either. Remember Billy Dibb against Gradovich twice.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and so I think Billy's kind of, he's just kind of learning the hardest way possible. You know, and you've got to, he's not really a promoter to me. He's a TV packager. You've got to develop these guys, develop the shows, learn, you know, who's your matchmaker? Who's really putting these things together? Or are you just trusting somebody else to do it for you?
I understand there are only two people that work there. He and one other person.
Wow. Well, yeah, he needs some help.
Couple of Billy Dibb. Maybe he has a market in Australia. But with Australian boxing, I want to go into a fact that Michael Katsidis is fighting tomorrow morning.
Yeah, I just think it's he's got some issues, man. He's really got to suss it out. Like, does he really want to do this? Like you said, because you're playing with people's lives when you do that. Like Golden Boy in the beginning, you know, they were picking up people because they had Oscar De La Hoya, and you figure, well, this guy's Oscar De La Hoya. His company's going to do well. I'm going to be – he's famous, so he must know how to get famous. And you're not really looking at infrastructure and how are they going to matchmake me and how did he really get there, all that stuff. And, yeah, you look at 50 and you're like, dude, think about this. You know, when he was still a free agent, James Kirkland had a choice between Mike Tyson Promotions and 50 Cent. He chose 50 Cent. And granted, they got that good fight, but that was also a B-side. You know, he was not
– B-side on a top-ranked card.
Yeah, and he wasn't supposed to beat Glenn Tapia. Now, you know, where's James Kirkland? I think that's kind of on him. But I think Mike Tyson, who's actually got some TV dates now, might have been able to talk to James, keep him on track, along with Ann Wolf, but probably would have got him some, you know, that would have been his flagship fighter. And what
a
dynamite combination that might have been. Yes. You know, and certainly you got to respect Mike, you know, even if you just kind of go, damn, dude, you know, at some of the things he's done, Mike warrants a ton of respect. So
I don't know how involved he is with his own company, but it seems to be doing okay. I mean, they're putting on halfway decent cards, and he's developing a pretty good prospect in Lubin.
Yeah, he is. I think, you know, where they're at, you know, because it was a Quinity Promotions, I believe, and they basically brought Mike in as a partner. And he puts his name on it, and it seems like he's actually involved. He wants to train, wants to talk to the fighters, and he's got a lot of information to give, you know, a lot of all kinds of experience. So I'm curious to see where they go. I was a little suspect at first, but, you know, they're not on their way to being a top rank or a Golden Boy. But I think it's kind of the same thing. As long as Mike stays interested and it stays kind of lucrative, or at least looks like it's going to be, I think Mike will be involved. And he's got pride, you know, and I think that he's going to want to keep this thing going, you know.
Well, and at the end of the day, Mike probably knows the sport a lot better than 50 Cent.
End of the day, absolutely. You know, from top to bottom, from how to, from start your career, how to maintain your career. I think that's really the big thing.
He learned what not to do from Don King, so.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, it's a minefield, this sport. Let me take another call here. And the 111 number, I'm not sure if it's a Skype number or not, but you're live on Leave It in the Ring. They might just be listening. All right, I'll put them back on hold. Heading down here, I want to talk a little bit about Matt Korobov. They just announced that, WB, that he'll be having to fight for Peter Quillen's belt. He's now the mandatory, Matt Korobov, for the WBO belt. What do you think about that fight? Who do you like in it?
I don't think much about the fight. I guess Quillen, Korobov never really developed the way I thought he would. Top prospect, top amateur, and he's just never, he's been a pro 7-8 years now, and I'm not seeing a whole lot different than I did a couple years back. And not that I'm completely blown away by Quillen, but it's, I'm leaning Quillen, and maybe it puts a little dent in the ever-changing Cold War, but there's not much to this one.
I don't really think a whole lot of Peter Quillen. I'm not sure about the beard. His punches are a little wide. I wonder about the power. I mean, he did get to a string of knockouts, but I want to see him in there with somebody that's a dangerous middleweight, that's going to come at him. And, as much as, kind of the boxing nerds want to say, well, I know who Endam is, or one boxing nerd in particular. What did he ever really do, Gabe Rosado, I guess he's fighting at middleweight, but again, it's kind of like, well, he's a guy that cuts, and I'm just not that impressed. The Konechny fight, people were, if you're outraged about the Salka thing, I just wasn't that excited by Konechny. He's a guy that's just kind of, to me, Peter Quillen, I think an elite loss waiting to happen. Is Korobov that guy? I mean, he's intelligent. I think his power is real, but I think it's a different kind of power. It's almost like a Miguel Cotto kind of power. It's kind of bone rattling, and he's got to hit you a few times to really get you out of there. But he can be explosive. He showed in this fight, and I thought he had a tough style in front of him. Uskadagi, God, man, I keep screwing up his name. He was tricky. He would move and slide and throw a lead punch and then switch around. And he didn't put a lot on his punches, which allowed him to have a little more speed. And it took a while. And what I liked about Korobov is he was kind of like Crawford in that he kind of let the fight come to him and like what he was going to, get. He kind of took what he could get, instead of forcing himself on the fight. And I know that might be boring to people, but with a guy like Quillen, I think, who's going to be aggressive and whose whiskers we don't know much about, I think this is a really interesting fight. I think the ring IQ of Korobov is higher. I think he's a much more subtle fighter. But we're going to see if he can take, Quillen's a big middleweight. We're going to see what he can do with a guy like Quillen, who 22 knockouts and 31 fights. He's not a slouch, he's not, but he's also 31 and he hasn't been particularly exciting himself. So it's an interesting fight.
Sometimes Quillen, especially in that last Konechny, it's like sometimes he wasn't completely sure of himself. He was, not robotic isn't the word, but really had to sift through his didn't come natural to him, where he had to sift through his motions. He was thinking, but he didn't really think through it. And it seemed like,
you're cutting out there, buddy. You may want to move
now.
Around to the... Oh, there you are. There you are. You there?
Get me again?
Say something. But you're cutting out. Well, let me jump to a question here. Got thrown one. Is Porter versus Brook happening? As far as I know, that's what I've heard. It's been that it is all set now. It's going to be happening at the StubHub Center on August 16th against Kell Brook. 12-round fight for the IBF welterweight title. One of my favorite titles is because Tito Trinidad held it for 15 title defenses, 7.5 years. Sean Porter's carrying that torch. He may not be Tito, but he's hammering out his own legacy. Drug testing has been a bit of an issue in that fight, or at least it's been bandied about in the press. But I fully expect them to do testing. I'm not sure what agency they'll both agree upon. You know, I think you know which one I recommend. I think it's, you know, Vada would probably be the one. But we'll see, you know. You know, and I want to clarify. It's not that I think – what's that?
That's really an odd venue for that fight.
It is. I mean, do you think about it, though, it should be overseas, I think. I think there'd be a lot more
– or even a Cleveland or a New York City, there'd be a pretty good drawing for that, I'd imagine.
I think Cleveland would be pretty sweet, you know, a nice homecoming fight for Sean. It might be a tough kind of venue, though. It might not be the one you want to do at home with all the distractions from doing it at home. You know, but certainly the East Coast might have been fun. But you know what? The thing is that StubHub Center, that's a fight fans venue. And I think regardless that neither guy is Mexican and the fight's happening in, you know, Carson and SoCal, people are going to come for that. And I imagine that, you know, the promoters are going to put some area-appropriate fighters on there. I think it can be built into it. But two, you know, I think it's a fight that venue is very special. And this fight has potential to be that kind of fight where you've got a boxer, puncher, against kind of, you know, I'm not sure what I would call Sean. He's turning into kind of a Swiss Army fighter, you know. He can kind of do
jack of all trades.
Yeah, and I really like that. I'm curious to see what he's going to do in this fight. This has potential to be a really special night. I'm certainly thinking about being there. I'm heading to Burning Man the next week, so, you know, flying down to L.A. may not be on the roster for me. But we'll see. It's a fight that I think is very special. It's going to be really good. I mean, both guys are they're true contemporaries of each other. One has gotten to that title a little bit sooner than the other. But, you know, Brooke has more fights, 32 fights, 22 knockouts. Porter's got 25 fights, one draw, 24 wins, no losses against, you know, 15 knockouts. That fight is the real deal. Let me answer another question here, Dave, said I got one on Twitter. This is Juan Francisco at jgarza6804. Do you guys think Kirkland knows how much he is appreciated and how much potential he has? Probably not.
No, I think he's completely in the dark.
Yeah, I mean, I know James probably as well as any fighter, you know, more so than any fighter I cover. He's still a bit of a mystery. I think he knows his fans love watching him and that he is the most exciting guy out there, or one of. But, you know, it isn't enough to get – I think that doesn't help him. It kind of keeps him in the dark in terms of what his real market value is, you know, and the fact that he's got to keep fighting. But something no one's ever really said, and I really believe this, that the older he's gotten, the harder it is for him to do what needs to be done with Ann Wolf to get him where he has to be. He's kind of a kamikaze warrior, and I think, you know, I think that makes him reluctant to do it.
You know, maybe you know, not intentionally, but this prolonged inactivity might help him in the end. It'll maybe add a year or two, a couple of years onto his career where he's not getting in these incredible wars.
Yeah, it's got to be tough, man. You know, for him to have to deal with that every time, and you can always hear it kind of weigh on him. It's like, you know, why aren't you with Ann? You know, like, she always gets you in the best shape, and he'd be like, yeah, you know, I remember when he was with, you know, Kenny Adams, he was first out of jail, and he's like, yeah, you know, he would say all this, like, basically all this praise for her, and then I'm like, well, why aren't you with her? And there was just this kind of pause and look on his face, and he didn't really quite answer it, you know, with anything that was concrete. It made me think, like, yeah, it's got to be tough, man, having Ann hit you, you know, and go hit you with hammers and chase you, and, you know, all the stuff that she does, you know. I imagine it's just hard to mentally get up just to know that that's going to happen.
Well, especially when you don't necessarily know when you're going to fight next.
That's the thing, too. You know, he's a B-side now. He's got to have to deal with that he's going to run a gauntlet every time, you know, that he's out, you know. Well, I think, you know, we're coming to the end of it here. Let me see if I've got any more questions. What's that?
No, that's probably my phone breaking in and out.
Oh, let me actually touch on something because we're heading down the 5 minutes, and I haven't gone on a PED rant. But this week, you know, last week it was discovered that Shale Sonnen had tested positive for HGH and EPO. I believe he had a previous two positives for two separate banned kind of fertility drugs, quote unquote, that also help you boost your testosterone after cycling off. He said he would also probably test positive for HCG, which is something also that has that same effect. This was precedent setting. You know, he was caught by the NSAC's, Nevada State Athletic Commission's random drug testing program, and they target tested him essentially, which is, you know, the way it's really done on the world stage on some levels. You know, when WADA does testing, they'll target test. You know, they don't always test, but when they do, it's off of intelligence that leads them to somebody, and they take their shot. I think, you know, that's what happened here. And Shale is a guy that he's really been precedent setting. He was one of the first guys to get a therapeutic use exemption for testosterone replacement therapy, you know, a 2E for TRT, if you will. And he was a guy that tested positive in California with a 17-to-1 TE ratio, which I think was their record for some time. I could be wrong.
That's a 10th Armstrong number.
That's some Alistair Overeem stuff. And Ryan Braun just shed, like, you know, one just Demi Moore tear when he heard that number. to me, you know, it shows, you know, like, one, you have to look at it and say, okay, that's a great victory. They did something good. But catching a dude that you know does dope and you've known for years that just got off TRT, that's not that much of an accomplishment to me. Why didn't they test the whole card? Why wasn't everybody hit with that? I mean, hit the guys that are younger than...
been pretty open about it.
Right. You know, it's like, oh, we got the guy that always talks. It's like testing me for marijuana. Well, you're going to catch me because I've talked about it before. It's just kind of obvious, you know. It's not really an accomplishment. There's no. But to me, it's the things that you need to look at, certain questions. One, will the litigation come off of this? All the guys that, you know, he's been a known user since 2010, and Dana White's been making nothing, excuses for the guy, you know, left and right. And sometimes he's on, you know, on board with banning TRT as it's been by the, you know, ARP. Sometimes he's not. But if I lost to Shale Sonnen during any of this period where they didn't want to do any sort of testing, that to me opens things up, I think, for lawsuits, all kinds of things. But also, you know, I think it's showing that if you catch him, I mean, EPO, one, it proves that it's in the sport. It's the first guy that got caught with HGH and EPO. It absolutely shows that this drug, you talk to Don Catlin, you talk to Victor Conte, you talk to, you know, other drug guys, you know, knowledgeable guys on both sides of the fence in both sports, and they'll tell you that EPO, not testosterone, is the drug of choice and the most dangerous drug out there because it increases red blood cell count and it increases endurance, which is the most vital thing you need, you know, in a combat sport. Is you want energy, you want to last. So I think this opens up a lot of things, but also, you know, the NSAC, as far as I know, the policies and procedures have not been posted, which they need to be published. And also, I'm not sure if the athletes are aware that they're going to be target tested by the Nevada Commission. Maybe that's part of the licensing process. I don't know. But these are things that need to be looked at. You can't just ape, you know, USADA or VADA. You actually have to do it the right way. Or when you hit arbitration, you know, that could come back to bite them. So a lot of things to look at. You know, even the HGH test, we'll see if all that holds up, or even if Shale's going to protest. I know he got fired from Fox and the UFC, but a lot of big things happening. But we got about 30 seconds here. Brian, let me just wrap up. Thank you so much for being the co-pilot today. It was a fun ride with you.
Appreciate coming on.
And thank you for the insights. I know you've been working on the Heyman stuff and the Golden Boy stuff for quite a while. I look forward to your stories on that. And Dave, you know, thank you for chiming in. Thanks to Terrence Crawford for being on the show. Dave, I'm going to steal your line. Just remember, folks, have a happy 4th of July weekend. If you're driving, don't drink because you might spill your beer. Peace.
See ya.